This is All of It. I'm Kusha Navadar in for Allison Stewart. Hey, thanks for spending part of your Wednesday with us. I'm grateful you're here. On today's show, we've got some new music to preview, first with Amel, who will perform live in studio, and then with Jordan Rockai, who joins us for a listening party for his new album. And we'll talk about how to find a nanny and how to look for a job if you want to be one. That's the plan, so let's get this started with Water for Elephants. In the new Broadway musical, Water for Elephants, it takes us a while to actually get the full picture of the titular elephant. First, it's just her ears, then her trunk, and slowly the full body of Rosie the elephant emerges. It's one of many beautiful and exciting choices made by the show's director, Jessica Stone. You might know her work on the Tony Award-winning musical Kimberly Akimbo. The story is based on the best-selling novel by Sarah Gruen. Set in the midst of the Great Depression, it follows a former veterinary student, Jacob Jankowski, who falls on hard times and ends up finding work at a circus. There, he falls in love with circus performer Marlena and with the beautiful elephant Rosie. The problem? Marlena is married to the circus owner and ringleader, August, who is mercurial and sometimes violent. He will do just about anything to keep the show running and get everyone paid. So when Rosie's stubborn refusal to perform threatens his bottom line, August's anger starts to mount. The musical goes all out to bring the circus to life, and that includes bringing all sorts of talented acrobats and circus performers into the ensemble cast. They are led by circus designer and co-choreographer Shayna Carroll, who has a long background with troupes like Cirque du Soleil. Hey, it's not every day that a Broadway musical has a circus designer. Water for Elephants is a beautiful story of love and chosen family. It's running at the Imperial Theater, and I'm joined now by director Jessica Stone and co-choreographer and circus designer Shayna Carroll. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you for having us. This is really, really nice to talk about this today.
I'm so thrilled to.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Welcome both. Jessica, let's start with you. What made you want to direct this stage adaptation?
Well, it felt so ambitious and impossible that that seemed really, I was curious to have the experience. I had been directing for a long time all over the country, and actually Elephants and Kimberly, I was in discussions around both of those shows and got the offer for both of those shows the same month. And they're very, very, very different. And I was really compelled by this idea of somebody towards the end of his life making a decision that allowed him agency and joy and adventure again, and through the prism of memory, was able to imagine a world that really excited me.
Yeah, that must have been an exciting month for you getting those two offers. That's wonderful.
It was a nutty month, to be sure.
Shayna, how about you? How did you become involved in circus performance and acrobatics?
Oh, in circus performance. Well, I started when I was 18. I grew up in Berkeley, California. And there was a local San Francisco local troupe called the Pickle Family Circus back in the 70s and 80s. And I was actually in theater and did not grow up liking circus, thought it was just, I mean, all sorts of reasons that it didn't appeal to me, that I could get into it another time. But in fact, seeing the Pickle Family Circus that was very intimate and very human. And in fact, my father got involved with it. He was a columnist. It's a long story, but basically I was there in their offices / studios, and I saw a trapeze artist very, very close up in training clothes and, you know, hanging by 1 foot, 5 feet from me. And that was sort of the moment where I really was able to see its kind of its beauty and potential for meaning and metaphor and all of those things that made me fall in love with it and change my whole life and do a 180 and decide to be a trapeze artist at the age of 18, even though I had no athletic abilities. But it's actually interesting because it sort of became, it planted the seed of a lot of the work I do now of wanting to kind of find that, similarly, that feeling of seeing someone close up in their training clothes and being able to identify with them as a human and seeing the extraordinary things they do. So that was, I think it's all connected. But yeah, and then I toured, I went to circus school in Montreal, which is like a conservatory for circus for several years, and then toured with Cirque du Soleil and started a company. So it's been quite a long journey of over 35 years or something.
Yeah. And I love hearing you talk about your first experience kind of being in the audience, because, you know, bringing it back to this musical, one thing I loved about this show, Water for Elephants, was that it felt like I was part of, I guess, not just an audience, but specifically a circus audience. We were gasping together. We were laughing together. We were clapping together. It was entertaining, but it wasn't just entertaining. It was thrilling, I would say. And now a lot of that has to do with the choreography. So, you know, Jessica, I want to start this part of the question with you. How early in the process did you realize that you wanted to have real acrobatics take place on stage?
I would say I knew that it was in our future, but I had been working on the show for maybe a year before I really understood how I wanted to use it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to just have arbitrary, you know, circus acts or circus choreography. I wanted it to be connected to the narrative. And so when Shana and I first met and spoke about it, we instantly bonded over that very desire that it's woven throughout the story, and we use circus for Jacob Jankowski's most vibrant, most important memories. Mm-hmm. Because this chapter was such a vibrant one for him, that the moment he meets the woman of his dreams, the moment he has to shoot a horse, the moment that he meets an elephant that it's honored with, the moment that he jumps onto the train before he realizes it's a circus train, is honored and explored through the physical language of circus. And then we started, which, you know, I can let Shana speak more to, but we started a long conversation and many workshops exploring what that looks like when. So for instance, when we're introduced to just the grounds and the community and they're raising a tent and what that means to literally raise the entire endeavor up for audiences to come and see a show, that language is going to look different than, and those the skill sets and the acts are going to look very different than how they might look in the dream, the fever dream that he has in Act Two when he's contemplating murdering his nemesis. And it might look very different than the sort of performative nature of the end of Act One when we're actually doing a number in the circus called the Grand Spec, and there's a, you know, this moment where everybody's doing all kinds of skills at once. So that was a really interesting, fertile exploration and journey that Shana and I went down.
I'd love to hear more about that choreography, because it is so, like you're saying, multi-layered, metaphorical, beautiful. And listeners, if you're just joining us, this is All of It on WNYC. We're talking about the new musical on Broadway at the Imperial Theater, Water for Elephants. We're with Jessica Stone, the director, and Shana Carroll, who's the co-choreographer, circus designer. Shana, we just heard Jessica talk through the thinking of the choreography. And I got to say, when I was watching it, One motif that I saw in a lot of that the musical that cut through in the choreography was this idea of expansion and contraction, especially when you look at the cast as a whole and the way that they moved as one body. So just talk to me a little bit more about that, what you heard Jessica say, how you thought through both the acrobatic choreography and the choreography that was non-acrobatic.
We should also say that we have a co-choreographer named Jesse Robb. And so I just want to add that in, that once we're in the land of the rest of our choreography, there's also another collaborator who was a very important part of this collaboration.
Thank you so much for pointing that out.
Yeah, exactly. I'd start by saying that, I mean, bouncing off what Jess said about the original vision and it being this memory play, I think that's one reason it really spoke to me and that I was so excited to do the project. Just myself having sort of been, in some ways, the equivalent of our main character in the sense I sort of did the equivalent of jumping a circus train and I've spent my life in circus. I feel like my memory can sometimes function through circus or my imagination can function through circus. So I love that as a basis that we could use circus language to, you know, it makes things, you know, bigger and higher and more vibrant in the way memory can be bigger and higher and more vibrant, and being able to tap into circus's potential to say things that we can't say otherwise. So I was really excited that, I mean, I tend to shy away from projects where I think they just want spectacle and tricks and hearing Jess, as she mentioned, really say how much she wanted to use it in a storytelling way to, you know, metaphorically all of those things. So that was great that we were so aligned there. And then it was wonderful to be able to just figure out in which moment, which essence of circus did we need? For instance, I've often said that circus is the most apt way of showing our interdependence when there's, you know, five people to do one trick, when two people need to throw someone and someone else needs to catch them. And it can say something about family and community that's different than saying it through words. And for instance, when Jacob, you know, he starts out by discovering he's losing his family, and he arrives at the circus and in some ways discovering a family. And so using that language viscerally to underline what that must be, there's other moments where what flight and freedom can do. Like, for instance, the moment with the horse, when we have a horse that is foundering and sort of the horse itself is dreaming of one last gallop through the field, and that same sort of freedom and painlessness and what aerial can do, what the aerial skills can do to achieve that feeling, again, sort of viscerally, but also in terms of the imagery it can provide that we can't necessarily do with floor choreography. So there's a few examples of that where circus has something innate in its way of expressing meaning. Even also, I keep using the word viscerally, but, you know, it does make our pulse move, our adrenaline go certain way that really complements the more cerebral experience of watching a story unfold. And sometimes you'll have a moment with great emotional stakes, and when you match that with great physical stakes, it's like you get this sort of complete, like you're feeling it down in your gut at the same time you're feeling it up at the top of your head, and it really cracks you open a certain way. So it was fun to be able to explore the choreography, and the movement kind of came, the details of it came after just conceptually what we wanted to feel in each emotional beat and figuring out how circus could bring it.
And one thing that I heard you say that I really resonates with me is that idea of what circus can do, seeing folks perform and act together where there's physical safety on the line, and it's a collective movement, and what it can say about family, because I saw so many examples of that during the show, and I kept wondering how the cast builds the trust that's required to do those kinds of feats, that kind of choreography over and over again every single night. Can you talk a little bit more about the trust building process in that?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I would first say that I think for the acrobats, it's part of their training in a way. I mean, it's really, it's, you know, when you think about when people do like trust fall exercises, I mean, imagine that just exponentially, when part of your training is just knowing when I'm up in the air, I have to just be a stick and not move, and the other person's going to balance me. And that's the rules. So doing that enough, it really does. You definitely learn to trust your colleagues and your equipment. And so it kind of comes hand in hand with being an acrobat in so many ways. And I think that, of course, it's not, it still needs to be gained in a company in terms of the culture we set and the mood we set. And I think that Jess could speak to that more. She really put a lot of effort and energy into really nurturing that inside the company. And I think the acrobatics helped for that to be the case sort of mutually, which is, it brought a different type of trust than actors often feel with each other. But it was something we prioritized, I'd say.
Yeah, Jess, say a little more about how you prioritized it.
Well, I think that typically, you know, in something as big as a musical, where you have to repeat every single night, there's not a lot of margin for error. So we tend to separate the skills. And it was really important to me. And there, of course, naturally has to be some of that in our show. We don't, you know, people who spend their lives dancing or singing or acting or, you know, as an aerialist, they spend their lives doing that and don't necessarily cultivate the other skills that are required in a musical. But it was very important to me that we have one company and that we don't all go to our corners. And so you have acrobats that are singing and you have actors that are hanging from a trapeze. Everybody is a puppeteer and no one started that way in our company. So what happens is there's a level of grace and patience and humility because everybody is a little bit out of their comfort zone and everybody gets to show off. So for that, I think it makes for a very healthy spirit and a healthy community in the company. It was really important to me that everybody participate in as much as they possibly could. And what's funny is the kind of, you know, there's obviously tremendous respect and discipline, but particularly respect for safety within the circus community. There is that in a more traditional Broadway musical company as well. But the ways that we experience and that we need a kind of recklessness in each of the disciplines is different. And that has also been really interesting to watch. You know, for those of us who don't dangle from trapezes or, you know, hang from our heads in a silk 30 feet, 40 feet in the air, that looks so like it requires such bravery and gameness. And that is the truth. At the same time, when you're going through a preview period in a musical and you throw new pages or a new song at actors and say, do that tonight, that requires a kind of recklessness as well.
Sure.
And yeah. So it was really fun for me to watch these communities watch each other and just dive into the deep end on a daily basis and learn from each other the kind of both preciousness and lack of preciousness required to do something like this. And it made for a really beautiful, brave community.
Yeah, everyone relies on each other, grows together, trusts each other. And it's beautiful. A great echo of some of the things that the show itself talks about, which is wonderful. We're talking to Jessica Stone, the director, and Shana Carroll, who's the co-choreographer and circus designer of the show Water for Elephants, which is running right now at the Imperial Theater. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the elephant. We're going to hear some of the show, and we're going to talk more about the wonderful choreography. This is All of It. We'll be right back. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Kusha Navadar, and I'm joined by Jessica Stone, who's the director, and Shana Carroll, who's the co-choreographer and circus designer of the show Water for Elephants, which is running on Broadway right now at the Imperial Theater. It's based on the book that you may have heard of in the past, and I would love to hear a number from the show. We've got a clip. This is a number that's about how part of a circus are depth in lies and illusion. This is a live performance from Good Morning America of the song The Lion Has Got No Teeth.
Jake, if you seem like a bright young lad, yes, it's true, you've been duped, but you shouldn't feel bad. You see, nothing around here's ever quite what it appears. If it was, then I wouldn't have a business. You see, the people, they come to the circus to see miracles performed, to see heaven and hell on earth. And so to that purpose, we give them angels and demons and everything in between them. Oh, but we who are made of the same stuff as they, how can we give them what they came for?
Lies, lies, lies.
People who could pay more.
Lies, lies, lies.
Say that it's amoral, but our pride's in our lies. Lies, lies, lies.
Shayna, when I heard that song, I thought, well, it's lies, but it's not quite lies. Like, there's a lot of visceral, real stuff that you feel, because I'm feeling something. And I was wondering, a question I really wanted to ask you was, what do you make of that idea in the song? As someone who has lived so much of your life in the circus, what would you say to August if he said, you know, everything in the circus is based on a lie?
Yeah, it's so interesting because we actually have had that discussion a lot inside the company, because it's exactly that sort of everything that we're actually saying on stage with the circus, and that everything that, you know, that I based my life on has to do with circus being very, very real. But it really is true to a certain era, which is more sort of the sideshow and the sort of carnival side of circus from that era. And so I think historically, it really speaks to what, especially who this character was and what some aspects of circus were. But I think it's more related to sort of sideshow trickery than actual, you know, the artistry of acrobatics on stage. But it does make an interesting counterpart. I mean, I think when we were talking about all the community and the interdependence that circus can represent, I mean, we also have moments where we're showing the danger and the violence, as you were mentioning, and through August's character with whips or knives, or so there is that other side of circus that is a little scary. So we do lean into that aspect of it sometimes too.
Yeah, and
I would also add that dramaturgically, it's just one character's perspective of what the circus is. We're not saying that as our mission statement of the show. There are actually three numbers about the circus, and we start with, this is what it is, these are the grounds, these are the skills, these are your friend, your new friends. The next one is one character's perspective of what it is, and the next is actually the circus's family and home, and we choose the ride. And so that number is actually only through August's perspective, and Jacob actually fights back and says, actually, where's the lie? I see people flying through the air. That's not a lie. So
it's great.
We have that very conversation on stage.
It's lovely. And, you know, you mentioned perspective, and it's like maybe an opportunity to talk about the elephant, I think, now, because I thought it was so cool the way you revealed the elephant. Rosie is one of the main characters of the show. And that, I imagine, posed a challenge. And I don't want to spoil anything, but I thought the way you did it was a really nice metaphor and kind of a show-stopping moment that audiences can experience for themselves. But Jessica, for you, I'm wondering, how did you figure out how to best represent an elephant on stage?
Well, it was all, again, through the prism of memory. And I wanted to make sure that we understood that we didn't really understand Rosie until we cracked the code. And so, you know, when first all you see is the look on someone's face when he sees an elephant up close for the first time. And then maybe you see, you know, the thing that he remembered was perhaps, I don't want to give anything away, perhaps, you know, the flicker of an ear, or perhaps the beginning of a bond. And we know that because they've learned she likes a certain treat and she starts to sort of become a little more affectionate with them. And so how she shows that affection is one piece of her body. Mm. And we don't really, he doesn't really remember her in full until he realizes, until he remembers the day that he knew how to actually communicate with her. And that's when he really saw her fully for the first time.
We just got a text that I thought you might be game for. The text reads, "So much sounds like it would be wonderful for children to see. Yet some of the content sounds like it may be very adult. Do you think this would be appropriate for an 11-year-old? Jessica, I'll leave that to you. What do you think?
I absolutely do. I think that there is some dangerous territory that we explore. There's darker human experiences that we explore. I would say maybe younger than 7 might be too much, although we have had some kids that are younger than 7 come. But I think 7 or 8 is probably your safe dividing line. But it's all, the show is done with such It's told with such love, and the themes in the story are so hopeful and so much about humanity, that the best parts about humanity, that I think kids can absolutely enjoy it. And it's a fairly safe watch. Shana, would you agree?
Yeah, and I'd even say, I think for even some of the darker parts might even, under than seven, it might even go over their heads. There's so much sort of beauty and fun circus that when I see the small kids there, I don't even know if they notice the darker parts as being as dark as they are. So I completely agree. It really works on many levels at once, which is great.
And, you know, to wrap up here, I want to invoke one of my favorite lines from the show. I think it's August. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's August who says the following. He says, to achieve greatness, you only need two things, hard work and not enough time. Hope I remembered that right. What part of the show are you each most proud of, in the sense of you come into it thinking this is going to be a big challenge, and now you look at audiences experiencing it night after night and you think, dang, we pulled that off? Shana, I'd love to start with you.
I mean, I actually feel that about Rosie, though it's not necessarily one of the circus moments that I worked on a lot. But I'm watching, you know, Jessica's vision and how it's, you know, all the different steps that it took to get there, and have her the way you're describing the impact she has. I felt like, yeah, I always get goosebumps when that happens, because knowing how, you know, what it took to actually have her come alive in that way. But in some ways, I feel that way about every moment in the show on some level. You know, so much of it seemed, before we started, it was so daunting, and there were so many elements and technically difficult. And almost every one of them, I feel like, oh, wow, we pulled that off. So,
And Jessica, how about you?
Well, I do. What I love about watching the show is I just see our whole team. I see our fingerprints all over it. And it triggers so many memories of my own over the years of developing this. There were so many outstanding questions, and so many times Shana and Jesse and I were in the trenches, you know, thinking, how are we going to do this one? And same with the set designer and our writers, and just all of us. I see our fingerprints all over it. But I will say, in particular, Road Don't Make You Young. We always talked about that was sort of the gate to the rest of the show, because it's such a beast. It's this 10-minute number, and you are learning about the world of the circus. We're being introduced. We're learning about Jacob. We're learning about all of these people that inhabit it. And we start with nothing, and we end in the middle of a show under the big top. And I'm just really, really proud of us all for where we landed.
And listeners, if you want to see that landing and many others in the acrobatics and the show and the musical numbers, you can check out Water for Elephants. It's running right now at the Imperial Theater. We've had Jessica Stone, the director, and Shana Carroll, who is the co-choreographer and circus designer. Thank you both so much for coming on and talking to us.
Thank you.
Selling smoothies is what I do, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. He's a small business owner, too, so he knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.